squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
At number 34, 18th Street in the suburb of Boysens, Mr. Johann Swart shouts a cheerful goodbye to his wife Joyce and sets out for the factory in Alberton, where he is on night shift. At 6:50 p.m., a light blue Danton saloon arrives at the house, collects Mrs. Swart, and moves smoothly through the side roads into the main stream of traffic. The car swings off the main highway and parks outside a second-rate hotel in the city. The rather seedy lounge bar is still quiet, and the waiter is able to bring their drinks quickly.
I better hang on to this 5 cents. I'll be needing it in a minute.
Why didn't you phone from home? It would have been much quieter.
It would have been too quiet. Too easily traced if our friend just happens to get any clever ideas.
You know, Harry, I'm not at all sure about this. What if he doesn't cooperate? I mean, what if he doesn't pay up? It could make things very difficult for us.
Not as difficult as it'll be for him if he tries any funny business.
Harry, have you ever done this sort of thing before? Are you sure you know what you're doing?
Relax, baby. There's nothing to know. It's a piece of cake, and this is only the beginning. I won't be greedy. Just a little bit at a time to get him on the hook, and then, wallop, we hit him big and hard. As soon as that's done, you can leave that lily-livered husband of yours, and we'll really hit the high spots together. Just you and me. How does that sound?
Sounds fine, Harry. If it works.
Of course it'll work. It's got to work. Well, order some more drinks, baby. I'm going to phone.
Please be careful, Harry.
Oh, for goodness sake. Anyone would think this sort of thing was dangerous. Believe me, girl, it goes on all the time. We're just getting smart, that's all.
Mr. Arthur Longhurst, a director of Mining Commercial Limited, returns home from his office where he has been working late. It's a Thursday night, and his wife has prepared some cold meat and a salad for the evening meal, but neither of them is very hungry. The French windows are open wide, and the throbbing sound of a multitude of crickets comes wafting through the warm night air.
We can eat whenever you're ready, Arthur. I thought we could go out onto the stoop if you like. Such a lovely evening.
Yes, that'd be rather nice. I don't get enough fresh air these days. I was reading last week about how they used to conduct their business in Roman times. Large, airy halls with pretty servant girls everywhere. And under the warm sun in the city squares. It'd be nice to get back to those conditions, wouldn't it?
It would for you, perhaps. But I, for one, don't fancy going back to the pre-emancipation days for women. Thank you very much. There's the phone. Probably for you. So I'll have to do the sherry's after all.
Saved by the bell. Hello, Longhurst here.
Ah, Mr. Longhurst. I'm so pleased that you're at home. We've got a little business to talk about, you and I.
Have we? What sort of business? Who's this speaking, please?
Never mind who I am. The point is, I know who you are, and quite a lot about you as well. Far more than you think.
What are you talking about? Who are you? What do you want?
Never mind who I am. It's not important. What is important is the fact that I happen to know something about you. Something I'm sure you'd prefer to be kept a secret.
Come to the point, man. I haven't the faintest idea what you're getting at.
Haven't you really? What a pity. Then I'll have to refresh your memory, won't I? It really is most peculiar. I was certain that you wouldn't have forgotten Frank Wilson.
Frank Wilson? What about Frank Wilson?
Oh, surely you remember him. He was murdered about, let me see. Must be nearly a year ago now. You knew him rather well, I believe.
Yes. Yes, I knew him. What about it?
You also had certain business dealings with him, which, if I remember rightly, you were very careful not to tell the police about during their inquiries.
What I told the police and what I didn't tell them is my concern. Who the devil do you think you are, phoning me up here in the privacy of my own home and telling me...
Never mind about the privacy of your home, Mr. Longhurst. You've committed a far more serious crime, unless I'm very much mistaken. I'm sure you realize the gravity of your offense. Withholding information from the police is a very serious thing to do indeed.
Well, I don't see why all this has to be dragged up now in any case. It's over. The whole filthy business has been forgotten.
Oh, no, Mr. Longhurst. Not by the police it hasn't. And not by me either. Now, you listen to me and you listen good. I'm the only one who knows about this and I'm quite prepared to keep quiet, provided you play ball with me. I'm not a rich man, Mr. Longhurst. A little bit of extra money will come in very handy at the moment. You get my meaning?
I understand you very well. Now, you listen to me. If you think that you're going to get away with blackmailing me, you can go and jump in the lake.
Very brave talk, Mr. Longhurst. But I don't believe you for a second. I'm not going to push you very hard. Just 300 rand. That's hardly anything to a man of your means. Think it over. I'll be in touch with you again very soon. It's a very simple deal, really. You pay up, and I'll shut up.
Wait a minute. Hello? Hello?
You had a good old chinwag there, didn't you? And I'm supposed to be the one who spends all day nattering on the phone. Who was it? Arthur, who was that?
Oh, nobody.
What do you mean, nobody?
Nobody you know. I'm sorry, dear. I didn't mean to speak like that. It's just that I'm... That phone call, I...
You don't have to tell me if you don't want to. I don't really want to know. At least I didn't. I was only making conversation, but you've aroused my curiosity now. Still, as I said, if you prefer
not to
tell me...
No, I think I will tell you. Let's go out on the stoop. I need some air, and I'll tell you everything.
Are you sure it's going to work, Harry? It seems so chancy to me.
Of course I'm sure. Now just shut your trap, will you? Beginning to sound like a blooming gramophone record. I've told you before, and I'll say it again. It's the easiest way of making a bit of quick money that there is. I've tried quite a few, I can tell you.
All right, Harry. Just don't get cross, please. It's just that I'd hate anything to go wrong, that's all.
If he has any doubts whatsoever about cooperating with us, we'll soon make him change his mind. You'll see. That money's as good as ours.
Mr. and Mrs. Longhurst continue discussing the whole matter of the threatening telephone call over supper. She advises him to go straight to the police, but he is hesitant and obviously reluctant to do so.
I think I've had enough to eat. Seems I've lost my appetite.
Arthur, do you think this is going to stop after you've paid up the first 300? Do you? If I know anything at all about this sort of person, once they've got their hands on a gold mine like this, they'll just keep on digging. That 300 rand won't be the end of it, Arthur. It'll just be the beginning.
Well, you don't know that. They might stop if I give them what they want.
Oh, if you really think that, then you're a bigger fool than I ever thought possible. Oh, and after 30 years, I know you're not that. No, you've got to stop fooling yourself, Arthur. You know that I'm talking sense, don't you?
I suppose so.
Then, if you don't phone the police first thing in the morning, I'm going to.
September the 11th, 9 a.m. At Radio Headquarters Brixton, Police Constable Kent is on duty when the telephone rings.
Police, Constable Kent speaking.
Oh, good morning, Constable. My name's Longhurst from Mining Commercial Limited.
Yes, Mr. Longhurst, what can I do to help you?
I've been having a spot of bother with someone who's been making anonymous phone calls. I'm afraid it's... Well... That he's trying to blackmail me into paying him a sum of money.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what to do about it at first, but eventually with my wife and myself, we decided that it would be best to report this matter.
Yes, sir. I'm sure you've made the right decision, sir. Would you mind holding on for a moment, sir? I'll just put you through to Lieutenant Willis.
To who?
Lieutenant Willis, sir. CID.
After a brief conversation on the telephone with Lieutenant Willis, Longhurst decides to go down to John Forster Square for a personal interview. He prefers to do this than have someone call for a statement at his own office. He arrives there just after 10 a.m., and 5 minutes later, he is seated opposite Lieutenant Willis in a small private room. He carefully relates the events of the previous evening and answers all of the lieutenant's questions.
And that was when you decided to get in touch with us?
Yes, that's correct. Finally, Mr. Longhurst, I'm afraid that I must ask you whether or not there's any substance in this man's claim. Were you trying to hide something?
Oh, you mean over the Wilson murder? Well, I already told you, Lieutenant, my only crime was to fail to report a dinner engagement with Frank Wilson on the night of the murder. But that was several hours before it actually occurred. I know I was wrong and that I should have reported it. I admit this and I'm prepared to take the consequences. That, however, is all. There's absolutely no truth in any insinuations that the reason I didn't report the meeting was because I was more deeply involved in the murder. That's just a pack of lies made up by this creature, whoever he may be.
I see. What was the purpose of the dinner engagement?
Well, it was his idea. He wanted to merge one of his companies with mine and completely corner the market in our particular field. It was a good scheme, and had it been anyone else, I might have been tempted, but not with Wilson.
Why not?
He didn't do business the same way as I did. We'd never have got on. He got rather heated after I turned him down. There was a bit of a scene. That was the main reason that I didn't report our meeting to you people. After the quarrel, well, things wouldn't have looked too good for me, would they? Also, if it had got around the city that I'd been negotiating a deal with Wilson, it might have upset a very large number of my other business associates. I realize now that what I did was totally irresponsible, but I suppose we all make mistakes.
Yes, I suppose we do. If you had reported, then you wouldn't have found yourself in this position now. Still, let's leave that side of things and concentrate on finding your blackmailer. $300,000 he wants, eh?
Yes, that's right. He said he'd be in touch again.
Good. The sooner he contacts you, the better. And when he does, we'll be waiting.
Arthur Longhurst leaves CID headquarters with strict instructions to contact Lieutenant Willis as soon as there are any further developments. The rest of the day passes uneventfully, and by 9 p.m. the following evening, he is still not heard from his blackmailer.
That's right, Joyce, my old beauty. There'll be no problems at all. I've got it all worked out. Exactly how he must pay the money and exactly how I'm going to collect it. I'll phone and tell him the glad tidings in a minute. I'll bet he's delighted. They don't like being pushed around, these chaps. They're so used to giving orders, they get quite upset when someone else has the upper hand.
What if he tells somebody? I mean, what if he even phones the police?
He won't. He's got more to hide than he has to tell.
Oh, same. Oh, look, Harry. Harry, I want to call it off. Forget about it. We can do without that money, and I honestly don't think it's worth the risk.
Have you gone out of your tiny mind? What makes you think I'll listen to you? If I want your advice, I'll ask for it. But until I do so, shut up.
Well, all right, go ahead. I mean, do it if you want to, but I'm not going to be involved. I'm having nothing more to do with it.
Oh, yes, you are, Joyce. You're not going to be able to pull out now. You were in this at the beginning, and you're going to be in it at the finish,
too. I'm not, Harry. I'm packing it in.
You run out on me now, and I'll go straight to your husband. I'm sure he'd be very interested to know about your activities in the evenings when he's slaving his stupid guts out on night shift.
Please, Harry, you wouldn't do that.
Oh, yes, I would. And then there's little George, isn't there? I expect I could think of something interesting for him, too.
All right. I'll stay with you. But just you leave my family out of this.
Don't worry, girlie. This is just between you and me. And Mr. Longhurst.
...10 p.m. At their home in Houghton, the Longhursts are about to take their customary stroll around the garden before turning in for the night when the telephone rings. Longhurst moves swiftly into the hall and answers it.
Hello, Longhurst speaking.
Hello, Mr. Longhurst. I told you I'd be in touch with you very soon, didn't I? You see, I always keep my word about everything.
What do you want this time?
I'm just phoning to finalize our arrangements. Now listen carefully. Do you know the road to Potch, the Mandeville Park Road?
Yes, I know it.
About 7 miles after the turnoff, you'll see a farm sign on your left. It's called a Green Triangle. You drive down that farm road for about half a mile, and you'll see a little fencing gate about 50 yards down the little track to your left. Are you with me?
I'm listening.
When you get there, you'll see a large brown envelope on the grass next to one of the gateposts. You place the money, which you must bring in used one-rand notes, inside the envelope, and then leave immediately. Is all that quite clear?
Yes, I think so.
Thinking isn't good enough, Longhurst. And by the way, I'm sure I don't have to remind you to come alone. If you don't, there'll be trouble. Okay. I'll just run over your instructions again. I don't want any mistakes.
Harry Taylor goes over the plan for delivering the money again and then rings off. He has no idea that his message to Longhurst is now triggering off a whole chain of other telephone calls in which he is the number one topic of conversation.
Lieutenant Willis, CID.
Longhurst speaking. He's just phoned again, Lieutenant. He told me where to take the money. He wants it tomorrow night at 6.
Hello? Put me through to the chief, would you? There's something I want to discuss with him. And then try and get me warrant officer Banks.
Hello, warrant officer Banks, sir.
Ah, good. I've been trying to find you. This is Lieutenant Willis speaking. I've been talking to the chief, and we'd like you to come along on a little job tomorrow night. Hello, Longhurst.
Lieutenant Willis again. Mr. Longhurst, sorry to disturb you so late, but we'd very much like to come down first thing in the morning. I've got an idea for tomorrow evening, and I'd like to talk it over with everyone concerned.
9 a.m., September the 13th. Arthur Longhurst is shown into Lieutenant Willis's office. Also present are Warrant Officer Banks and Detective Sergeant Gibson. On the table, there is a large-scale map of the area where Longhurst has been told to leave the money.
The dirt road, which leads eventually to the farm, is here. Small track leads off to the left, here.
Mm-hmm.
And reaches the gate as spoken of in the delivery instructions about here.
Is this all open grassland on either side of the track, sir?
One side is open grassland, yes. The other is pretty flourishing woodland.
Doesn't sound too good, sir. Could make things rather difficult for us.
Yes, we could have had a better spot, but then we didn't pick it. For our friend's purposes, it's ideal.
What do you propose, Lieutenant?
Oh, it's quite a simple plan, really. It's how well we manage to execute it that will count.
p.m. Lieutenant Willis and Warrant Officer Banks leave John Forster Square and drive out on the Potchefstroom Road. They reach the place of the intended rendezvous and conduct a quick reconnaissance of the area. They park their car some little way off and camouflage it amongst the foliage. As they had seen from the map, the area to the left of the track is well populated with a large number of tall, strong trees, the leafy green branches providing a wealth of cover, both for the detectives and for the blackmailer. At 6 p.m., unseen by the hidden policeman, Harry Taylor and Joyce Swart arrive, park about a kilometer away, and take up a position from where they can survey the gate.
All right, this will do. You can see the gate perfectly from here.
Phew, why do you have to park so far away? Not used to all this walking, especially on this sort of ground.
Oh, safety first. That's my policy. If anything does go wrong, and I'm not saying that it will, mind you, just in case it does, then we want to be able to get away real smartish. That's why I wanted to park only just off the road. Yeah, that spot was the nearest suitable place.
Here's the envelope. Do you want it now?
I don't want it. Not until there's something in it, anyway. Go and put it down by the gate.
Me? Oh, please, Harry. I don't want to get mixed up in this, really. I don't.
Remember what I said, baby. And get moving.
Where are you now, Banks? Over.
About 10 yards into the trees, almost level with the gate. I moved up a bit because the setting sun was right in my eyes. Couldn't see a thing. Over.
All right. I haven't moved from my position. I think this is... Hey, there's someone coming out of the trees about 50 yards up from you. Can you see there? Over.
Yes, yes I can. It's a woman. She's getting to the gate, and she's got the envelope with her. Shall I pick her up now, sir, or not? Over.
No. Don't make any sort of move at all yet. Longhurst didn't say anything about a woman. And we know there's a man involved. If you pick her up now, we'll probably lose him. Just sit tight. If we wait until after Longhurst's been, we may get both of them at once. In any event, someone will have to pick up the money. So we'll be no worse off, even if we do only get one of them. It's worth waiting. Over.
Right here, sir. She's going back into the trees now, sir.
Okay. Now, we just sit tight until after Longhurst's been. Just a few more minutes.
6:31 p.m. Arthur Longhurst, with Detective Sergeant Gibson well concealed on the back seat, turns his car onto the little track. Under the watchful gaze of four pairs of eyes, all carefully hidden amongst the trees, he drives slowly towards the gates and the waiting envelope.
He hasn't got far to go now. I'm going to move a bit closer to the point where that woman went back into the trees. How's he getting on? Over.
He's nearly there now. He's picked up the envelope and he's putting the money inside. That's it. He's finished now. Putting the envelope back by the gatepost and getting back into the car. He's turning around now, sir. Driving away. Over.
Good. I've moved further up now. All we've got to do is to wait for the pickup. First theirs, and then ours.
6:58 p.m. It is very nearly dark, and still nobody has made any move to pick up the waiting envelope. Realizing that the dark will help the blackmailer, Lieutenant Willis decides to move in on the point where he thinks they may be. Warrant Officer Banks receives order over the walkie-talkie set to circle round and move in from the other direction. He has almost reached his objective when he sees a small movement from a dark shape silhouetted against the rapidly dimming sky.
Somebody just ahead of me, facing the other way. Okay. Let's see if I can get a bit closer before I make my prison.
What's that? Who's there? I've got a gun!
Look out, Harry! They're coming over this way!
Where are you? Now you're trying to run.
I'm getting out of here. Look out of my way!
Look out!
Come on, let's get out. Hey, stop! Stop or I'll shoot!
I have a better chance if I...
All right, you stop. I'm going to tell her this. Nobody's crying about it.
It wasn't my idea. He said he hurt my little boy and I tell my husband and he threatened me...
Wait a minute. Just calm down. Pull yourself together. First of all, you can tell me who you are. And what's more important, who he is.
p.m. Warrant Officer Banks gives up the search for Taylor and the two police officers take the girl, Joyce Swart, back to headquarters for questioning. She is very bitter at having been forced to act as an accomplice and tells them everything she knows about Harry Taylor. At 9 p.m., Willis and Banks drive to his flat in Brixton and let themselves in with a key they have been given by Joyce Swart. They wait there in the darkened room until 11:30 p.m., when a key is turned in the latch and the door swings open.
Hold it there, Taylor. Don't try to run again. You won't get away with it this time. Switch the light on, Banks.
Yes, sir.
Drunk, too, by the looks of him.
It's a free country. I can have a few drinks if I want to.
Yes, I suppose you can. But there are other things you can't do. And blackmail is one of them.
Subsequent trial, Joyce Swart was given a suspended sentence of 1 year in view of her cooperation with the police. Harry Taylor was found guilty of attempted blackmail and sentenced to 3 years imprisonment. For being in possession of an unlicensed firearm, attempted murder, and resisting arrest, he was sentenced to a further 6 years imprisonment, making a total of 9 years penal servitude.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of squad cars.
V
Listen again next Friday evening to another dramatic story in our authentic South African police series, Squad Cars. Squad Cars is directed by Colin Fish and produced by David Goodman.